Okay, can we open the floor to Christian? Yay!
That is just, I think I need to ask for a correction. He was talking about Owen, you know, Owen I used the word socialism, and you said 1927. I think you probably meant 1827.
I certainly did, yes. Yes, yes.
I think it was Churchill that said, you know, after the war that we need to give them reforms, otherwise they will give us revolution.
Yeah.
You know, because you had all these young men who been through so much and given up so much for, you know, for king and country and all that, and they were going to get screwed as soon as they got home, they had nothing to look forward to, and there was going to be big trouble. And the other thing about, you know, the off service and the Education Act is that when they was calling up young men for war service, they found that, you know, the working class was, you know, totally unfit. The huge numbers of young men were suffering from tuberculosis, rotten teeth, you know, all the diseases of poverty. And they figured that after the war, you know, the gambling and winning the war, there would be a huge amount of reconstruction. And they needed fit workers. And educated enough to be able to use the new technologies that come into being during the war. So, I mean, all that nationalisation and all this, as you pointed out, these reforms to the health service and education were essentially there to benefit the Catholic class.
I did have 1827 written down.
You said
90. I'm interested in words and how they've come to be used, and how the same words are used by people to mean something, you know, quite different. I mean, you have absolutely no control over it. the term socialism was there before the Marx's definition of it, but the other things sort of, it's like, almost like saying black's white when they're saying that the capitalism's gone, you know, and this is in the interest of workers, and you just wonder how much they really, really believed it. They did have a sort of a low opinion of what workers could do. The quote from, if I can get hold of the book, that Cripps said after, oh right, in his speech in 1946, he declared, "There's not yet a very large number of workers in Britain capable of taking over large enterprises. Until there's been more experience by the workers of the managerial side of industry, I think it would be almost impossible to have worker-controlled industry in Britain. And even if it were on the whole desirable..." So, you know, absolutely no idea of what we mean by socialism at all.
Yeah, fine, I was at the Lambeth County Show this morning in the early afternoon with the party still. The group, the ex-men, were part of the trade union socialist coalition, had a presence there. So I wandered over and I was looking at all the stuff they had on offer. You know, we want £10 an hour wages, you know, more health service, you know, more jobs, this, that, you know, blah, 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 blah. And they also had for sale the copy of Value, Price and Profit. So I picked it up and turned straight to the back page where Marx criticised trade unions for, you know, exaggerating themselves, the continuous guerrilla warfare of the wages system rather than trying to end it, and where he says abandon the conservative model, a fair day's pay for a fair day's work, and describing your battle to revolution, watch for the abolition of the wages system. And I'm just looking at him, and I'm trying to catch this guy's eye. I've got a sneaky feeling he probably knew who I was, and he didn't really want to address me. So in the end, he had to, you know. And he said, "Do you want to buy it?" I said, no, I've got a copy. I was just checking out to make sure you had edited it, you know, it wasn't an abridged copy. And he looked at me and I said, "Because the back page contradicts everything you've got on this boy here." And he wouldn't buy it, he just turned it back on the top. And, you know, and they would call them, the point is, they would call themselves socialist. You know, and they've got absolutely no intention whatsoever of the common ownership of means of production and distribution. Well, the democratic control, you know, none whatsoever.
No.
I mean, from what I can gather, they were, their whole idea is that there's nothing wrong with capitalism, they can't be cured by getting rid of the capitalists and putting him in charge of it. You know? That's it.
Yes, yes.
Well, ask a question. Was anybody else
been asked? You're at the same time as Adam, so carry on, Mr. Frank.
Well, I mean, the Labour Party did say in that period, you know, in the first election after the war, second war, that we're a socialist party in proud of it. Whereas now they wouldn't say that now. They wouldn't like say that now. They didn't get elected at this currently. They wouldn't have said that if they thought they were going to be elected. On the other hand, no capitalist party says we're a capitalist party and proud of it. They pay lip service to capitalism. We argue it's the only conceivable society. But they don't say we're proud of it, do they? So why do you think the Labour Party did say that in that period? Why do you think they actually did say that we're a socialist party and proud of it?
Well, they were using the term not to mean nationalisation, and they were proud to be that's what they were going to do, because they, you know, they were selling it as being something good for the country. But I'm not sure how much they actually believed this stuff about, you know, it was good for the workers to be in a nationalised industry, because plainly it didn't make any difference to them. Somehow, sort of selling that to them, that's sort of strange. I mean, it's sort of rhetoric, really. That's how it's used. But somehow, the Labour Party had this air of being for the workers. I mean, the name Labour for one thing, and coming from the unions. But I mean, so the other day that I had relatives who in the 1950s told me that Labour was the next best thing. I mean, they knew about socialism because the family knew about it, but that Labour was the next best thing, and it really had this sort of aura of being for the workers. And I would say that when Labour sort of did things against workers, they always did it with hand on heart. You know, this hurts us more than it hurts you to do this to you. It's rhetoric.
Okay, Mr. Adam?
I wasn't going to say anything serious. I was just going to say that Sir Stafford Cripps is known as Sir Stiffer Craps.
Oh, God.
Any part of that.
Yes, yes. Churchill said of Cripps, "There, for the grace of God, comes God."
Yes, yes.
But he was a really left winger, wasn't he, before the war?
Yes.
He was expelled from the Labour Party.
Yes.
Yes, he was, yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Rapid turnaround there. Yes, Miss Jacqueline?
Pat and members, as the Labour Party, if I remember correctly, was formed 2 years after the Socialist Party, and calling themselves socialists, were they aware of this party at the time? Why didn't they join if they were socialists or wanted socialism? And
would you?
I'm sure there was standards at the time, archives, and all the rest of every word that was said.
Would you like to take that?
Well, they weren't formed with the aim of socialism. That wasn't what they were about. They were about the union problems, the union representation, getting more workers into Parliament, but for union reasons. I mean, socialism wasn't there. It wasn't their aim at the beginning. It wasn't until 1918 that they got Clause 4 and this, you know, nominal the adherence to socialism, but meaning nationalisation, but using the terms were there, the terms were about. And that was what was so nice about the meeting that we had here, and I'm not going to remember the man's name, Andrew...
Kleiman,
who'd obviously, you know, read that sort of belit them to say he's read, but I mean, obviously studied and talked about Capital and Marx's view, but drawn the same conclusions that we've drawn, because so often it doesn't seem to be the case, and you sometimes wonder if they've actually had read the appropriate volumes, not, but...
I think, from what I can gather, I think that there was a amongst working people, there was a decent idea of what socialism was. And when you look back at the working conditions, the living conditions of the workers at that time, then what the Labour Party did was use the word socialism very opportunistically to be associated with justice and fairness and they were opportunists, and they was using the power of the working class to further their own ends, essentially.
There were certainly those who knew about it. I mean, there's a report in the Standard sometime in the 1920s of a meeting in Watford and I can't remember the party member's name who went there, but they were still, well, we're going the same way as you, but we're going to do, we want these things first. And all the things they wanted was about housing and I think allotments, so that the unemployed could grow some vegetables or something, and something, but all the same sort of thing. We've got to do this first. It's the old meantime party.
Was it true that when they brought in Clause 4 in 1918, it was devoid of the word exchange, and
yeah,
they added exchange in 1928.
Yeah, 29.
29. Yeah. Mm. Mm. I was chatting to a Labour Party member. I was talking about that, and he had absolutely no idea what sort of about it was for. The original version had no exchange, and then that was added later on.
Yeah, I think they added distribution and exchange.
Yeah.
Yeah. Distribution and exchange in 1929.
The implication is that the Socialist Party of this party is the only genuine Socialist Party in this country, but also in the whole wide world. Now, would you guys try to say that? I mean, I'd be reluctant to say that, even if it's possibly true, but it seems to be so far-fetched that we could be the only genuine party in the whole wide world, not just this country, then and now, which is proclaimed socialism. I mean, would you say that is true, lamentably true, or...?
In one sense, of course, I don't know. But on the other hand, you had the man that I mentioned, who's in his organisation, is a Marxist and humanist one. But he's got absolutely the idea that capitalism has to go. So that's what I would expect, that there would be groups, but whatever sizes, with those same ideas. But what form they take. But I mean, there absolutely has to be art groups that have the same ideas. Similar isn't good enough because it might help.
It can't be done nationally. It can't be done on just one country.
No.
It's got to be almost worldwide.
But you imagine that if there was I don't know what size it would have to be, but if there were a sizable number in one country, how it would be picked up. And with today's communications and things, you can hardly sneeze in one place without, other people getting their hankies out.
Okay, Danny.
The Marxist-Humanist Association, not a political party.
No.
And we are a political party. And as socialism is democratic, there can, logically, it's logical, entirely logical, that there can only be one socialist party. Because what socialists do, they organise together. And our object is a declaration of principles. Is It's actually so, you know, I can't see, if you were a socialist, I cannot really see the objection to joining. You might, I mean, we have members who are not too convinced about using Parliament, but they realise it's a democratic party, and they realise that it'll be those members, those workers at the time who make the revolution, not us.
Mm.
And so therefore they're in the party. So, you know, I mean, logically speaking, there can only be one party. And I think really, you know, from what I can gather, and I've had a really good look around, we're here. The World Socialist Movement is here.
Now, I guess that you're right about that, but with the ideas taking off, I can't actually imagine a great queues outside coming in for four mays to fill up. That there has to be organisation, but it would be nice, you know, if that's how it happened and we have long queues out there and thing. But I can't imagine it being quite like that, that when the ideas take off. It absolutely has to be organised and has to be of people knowing precisely what they want, understanding properly, not, you know, do away with without any idea of what to replace. It's got to be, it's got to be fully understanding of it, but quite how it's organised, I don't know. We advocate that how we say that it has to be done within the political party, but as long as it is properly organised and democratic.
Essentially, it has to be coherent.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yes, yes.
And socialists put away their egos and you know, get together and thrash things out. And we organise.
Mm.
We do. And that's what will have to happen.
Mm.
And only workers or anybody for that matter, only who are prepared to do that can really call themselves a socialist.
Yeah.
If you're not prepared to organise within a coherent organisation, then you've no real claim to being a socialist.
Mm.
You might be out quote marks, you know, out in the night, but if you're not prepared to do what it takes, then, you know, you're a poser.
If I could stick my oar in there, in regard to your question, Frank, what I was going to say was that my talk is actually going to be on this sort of subject. When did, for example, what was the difference between our party and the other parties, and in relation to socialism, could they claim to be socialist? And I'm not going to tell you the answer, because then you'll have to come along in a month's time to hear the answer. But actually, it's going to be rather interesting, the answer, because it's not going to be exactly on party lines. But I'll leave that aside, or rather, it's not going to be the answer you've heard so far. Adam, Mr. Adam.
I make a serious comment. I was with Danny at the Lambeth Country Fair, and they were handing out leaflets. Jeremy Corbyn for Labour leader. I mean, the good news is he doesn't mention the word socialist at all, but he says, together we can build a fairer Britain.
Yeah, yes.
Help create a more equal society by voting for a principled Labour leader committed to opposing austerity, protecting our environment, promoting peace and investing in our future. I mean, that's quite radical actually compared to what the other candidates are saying. Mm-hmm. You know, we must be pro-business, we must be against welfare and so on. But it's Michael Foot and Harold Wilson, all that thing all over again. But then it says on the back here, Jeremy Corbyn for Labour leader. Address Britain's wealth divide, building an economy which works for the many, not the few. Well, that's not good. I mean, they think they can reform capitalism, or he thinks he can reform capitalism, to work for the many, not the, you know, not the few. I'm sure he's a sincere, principled person. He's probably one of the, his sincere belief what he says, while the rest of us professional politicians sort of echoing what they think people want to hear. Pink Tories, aren't they? Basically, they've done a lot. But it'd be quite funny if he was an actor. I don't think he will be, but it'd be quite funny.
It's very strange, actually, that they, in this they have an election and they put forward proposals. It's not the first time it's happened. They lose the election and then they've got to have another look at the proposals, whereas we have a policy, and if we don't get votes, well, it doesn't make us say, well, let's have a different policy. We still want the end of capitalism and want socialism. But it's very strange. The other thing is that they're expecting the leader to come up with something. They've got to come up with something, and then they'll elect them for the leader, as opposed to the party deciding the policy. I do remember at times in the past where I think it maybe changed from time to time, but the government, if it was a Labour government, wasn't bound by conference decisions. I'm not sure if that wasn't at the time when Callaghan was there, but I have some. I can't give chapter and verse, but I seem to think that at the time that's how things were. You'd have grassroots, as it were, people who would sound much more, wanting things done for workers, as it, however they expressed it. It's sort of different to what would come from the platform. There's always been sort of two Labour parties. I always think there's the one that runs the country when it's a government, and the others, well, no, we don't agree with that. And the people, the Labour people you meet, no, we don't agree with what they're doing. You know, we're on the Ben wing, and there's something different.
Gary was in the Labour Party once a week. We can't all be bad. All the time.
Yeah, I can't remember that. I had one wander around, I went into the trade union tent, they've got a big bank going up, boxing, no to austerity, And you walk in, there's a chamber fire everywhere, and all kinds of pamphlets, and all kinds of stuff. This was thrust into my hand by some fellow who's a young member of the Labour Party who was campaigning for Mr. Corbyn here. And it create a prosperous society, desperate to work with our quiet times, our time, stop the renewal crime, celebrate multiculturalism, and all the other. And I asked him, I said, do you think you can do that within the framework of capital? And I wasn't getting an answer, so I questioned him, I really think. And in the end, he said no. And I said, so why is he promising it? You can't get an answer. And it shows, the real deep cynicism that runs through the Labour Party. I mean, he's a utopian idiot. You think he's like, I'm an idiot guy. The old saying, capitalism, the workers, is about species that are buying a slaughterhouse and the animals. The process is too much. And it says a principled candidate. Oh, if he's telling me lies. Yeah, well, he must know he's not a body.
Yeah, I think someone different could. I was thinking about what's happened in Greece, and you had this overwhelming majority that the government got. People opposed to austerity. But the government, they can't deliver. They cannot deliver because it's within the system. But you do sort of feel that you want to shout out about, you need to change the system. It's, we can do things. Money, what does money do? You can't, it doesn't do anything. It's human beings applied to nature given raw materials that make everything and do everything. The other thing on that leaflet, it says more equal. Well, these words are always qualified. A fairer society, more equal, more democratic, but never the absolute, common ownership, everyone having the same relationship to the means of production, a real democratic and equality and... all working for the common interest, cooperating to produce what's needed, and taking account of the environment and so on. And what do we have to do?
Just for the record, Jeremy Corbyn will know about socialism because that was one of the constituencies that we contested at the general election. We had a candidate, Bill Martin, standing against Jeremy Corbyn. So they all appear together on Hustling, so you wouldn't know what socialism is.
Well, he might not be.
He was a candidate, we had a candidate in Withington North, was it? Yes, didn't it? I mean, it's the others, you think they know what was standing there.
So when I went to a Hustling meeting, one night up that way, the Labour, the rep, the woman representing the Labour Party, that sort of being on standing in with Jeremy Corbyn.
Yeah, she's probably the MP for Islington South.
Ah, right.
So he's the MP. Yeah.
The other thing, you can't really think of an awful lot of the working class if he feels that they have to be led by somebody like him. He must really have a low opinion of us workers if he thinks that we need leading. He has a very high opinion of himself if he's able to do it.
I don't think he does. I think he's a joke, and he'd be the first person to shoot himself. He's elected.
Is there
any discussion on this sort of election, this election here in 1945? Is there
any views on that now?
Any views on this? The fact that
that's a good observation.
The party membership went up supposedly, or approximately up to about 1,000.
1,200.
The fact also that they attracted both indoor and outdoor, and not just outside, got very large audiences. And yet we don't attract large audiences now. I don't think any other party does, really.
Miss Jacqueline.
Tea time.
Miss Jacqueline?
Well, the reason I would say for that is you didn't have the internet. Most people didn't have a telly. It was after the war. There were two people scrabbling around on Bashan's store, even though it had been ended up. I remember Bashan was going on. In the 1950s, early 1950s, my family was on Bashan. It was a time frame. And we were more looking towards authority. You know, if you went to school, you did as you're told. If your parents said you didn't do that, you didn't do it, or you left home. It was an entirely different time. Youngsters of 21 looked about 35, 40 nowadays. And living at home with their parents, it was entirely different. That's where the, you know, you went out to the cinema if you could afford it.
There was no telly.
There was nothing. When I say nothing, there wasn't what we have now. And people were in families and all this sort of stuff. Quite a different time. So nobody's trying to say didn't attract. What we want to say is, why do the working class still look to leaders? Why do the working class not take responsibility for themselves, stop trying to align themselves with the capitalist class, calling themselves middle class and all this nonsense, while sitting at bus stops? I've seen and heard this sort of nonsense. Or going to union leaders. Why do they not decide to put an end to it? We're our own worst enemies, the working class.
Okay, is it time for tea time now, everyone?
I should think so.
Yay! Thank you very much, everyone, for coming.